Good morning. This is Wendy Bauer reading to you today from the Decatur Herald and Review. It's June 15th, 2020, and we will begin on the front page with the article headlined, Theater Endures, How Millikan Theater Community is Adapting Amid COVID-19. Millikan University Associate Professor of Theater, Tom Robson, has been watching social media since the worries of the coronavirus began. Like so many, he became frustrated. His friends in the professional theater industry were voicing their concerns. They were posting comments such as, "Is COVID the death of theater?" and "Will audiences ever want to come back?" or "Will we ever go back?" Robson is a theater historian teaching the subject at Millikan. "This is hardly the first time we've faced a situation where theaters were shut down," he said, "or where it seemed like it would be very hard to get people to go back to the theater." Robson has researched similar situations, and the audience returns every time. "Because they want to be there," he said. To help ease the worries and as an opportunity to teach, Robson created an optional online lecture, Theater Endures, for Millikan Theater and Dance students. The presentation was available shortly after graduation. He simply announced the lecture on his social media. "All of a sudden, all of my friends and my alums were saying, 'We would love to see this,'" Robson said. He presented the lecture three more times to the extended group. Those people invited others to view the presentation. "I was presenting it to people who I had never met or I had never heard of and didn't know Millikan University at all," he said. "I was getting really wonderful feedback." Theater is going through struggles right now, but Robson is not the only Millikan faculty and staff looking toward the future. Mary Black, director of Millikan's School of Theater and Dance, said many in the school are excited about the new Center for Theater and Dance scheduled to open in August. "The finishing touches are going on the building now," she said. "Equipment is being loaded in, and a lot of the finishes, such as paint and trim, are still being applied." The faculty and students will have state-of-the-art facilities and equipment to work with for the first time and will be able to push our students and our productions to new levels, Black said. Millikan faculty trains students to enter a constantly changing theater world, even a world present and post-COVID-19. Opportunities to work in a variety of performance venues, in a variety of styles, and with a variety of equipment will help to prepare students for whatever challenges they face in the future, Black said. Robson's Theater Endures presentation addresses some of the changes the theater world has already seen. With PowerPoint visuals, the lecture is approximately 30 minutes, with additional time for discussion. He addresses a few history lessons on the potential extinction events in the history of the Western theater, he said. Theater dates back thousands of years. Robson has limited access to research materials, so he uses information on Western theater that is more readily available to him, he said. He starts in the 5th century BCE and continues through the 21st century. "I just look at a couple of times when people were really worried the theater would never come back," Robson said. For example, the Elizabethan times had similar situations as COVID-19. According to Robson, in 1593 and 1603, the theaters were closed because of plagues. The years immediately afterwards provided some of the most popular works still known today. William Shakespeare wrote Romeo and Juliet and A Midsummer Night's Dream after the first plague. After the second plague, he wrote King Lear, Othello, and Macbeth. It's sort of insane to produce that quality and quantity of work in such a short period, Robson said. The presentation addresses more modern shutdowns as well, including September 11th, 2001. People said, "No one will ever go back to a Broadway theater after 9/11, Robson said. "Why would someone want to be in a public space in the heart of the American economy with 1,200 strangers when one person with a backpack could blow the building up?" Broadway opened days later and audiences flocked back, Robson said. A professional actress in Denver, Trinity Thomas, watched Robson's presentation out of curiosity, she said. "Theater has persisted through tougher times than this," she said, "so I'm not concerned for its survival or successful return." Thomas chose a career in theater partly because the industry, including actors and patrons, contributes to life, she said. "So my curiosity lies in what new and innovative ways this industry will reinvent itself through this pandemic," she said. The changes are a positive outcome for Thomas. "Everyone is drawn to people and experiences that provide optimism," she said. Thomas understands the current pandemic is not the end of theater. "We have survived through pandemics, wars, plagues, and depressions in the past, and we'll do it again this time," she said. "The need for people to gather is a fundamental part of being human. That desire for community is steadfast, and people will be drawn to come together to experience art. That will never change." Robson understands theaters will have to adjust and grow again post-coronavirus, but the audience will be waiting, he said. The instructor addresses the new forms of theater through Zoom presentations. Although Thomas said she will never be concerned for theater's return, the presentation provided a sense of reassurance and security. "I have always believed in the power and magic of live performance," she said. "I have no doubt our patrons feel the same way, despite how long it will take for us to return to a new normal." After a shutdown or a frightening event, theater artists adjust to new circumstances. The Great Depression required artists to do more with less, Robson noted. "That got audiences excited," he said. "Theater always responds to its times." Rob Lott, host of the leading creative podcast, invited Robson onto his show after hearing the presentation. Lott had heard many of the same concerns regarding theater's potential demise. "History repeats itself," Lott said. "Things will be okay, but different, and we need to be ready to create new things. Experimental theater is exciting, but things don't always go according to plan." After the presentation, Robson allows time for discussion. Recent graduates and theater professionals provide different ideas and feedback. No matter the topic, the discussion provides the profession opportunities to bond. "We are a large network of interconnected people who care about each other and our field," Robson said. "That connection is very powerful." Robson presents the lecture to groups upon request. Recently, he brought the presentation to a podcast, a Pennsylvania high school class, and will speak to a theater group in San Antonio, Texas. Artists, organizations, schools, and theater groups can contact Robson through email or Twitter. And this has been part of the Together Decatur series. If you know a person or a story that exemplifies the best of Decatur, contact Donette Beckett at 217-421-6983. And continuing on the front page, farmers enjoy fast start for planting. At this time last year, Logan County farmer Bob Lindsay was still planting corn in a field between Lincoln and Bloomington. The spring weather patterns were nothing like most farmers had ever seen before, and he, like most everyone else, was way behind. Last Friday, he was standing in a field and some of the plants were beginning to gravitate toward knee level. "It is just a little shy of knee high, but we are getting there," he said, "and as long as it is knee high by the 4th of July, it's going to be fine." Lindsay, like most central Illinois farmers, finished planting last month and now is hoping the weather will cooperate during the summer growing season. "There is never a perfect season, but I am happy where things are right now," he said. As of a week ago, the United States Department of Agriculture reported all but 2% of the corn had been planted in Illinois. At the same point last year, only 65% of the corn had been planted. The 5-year average is 92%. Last year, the state recorded its wettest January through June on record, and farmers didn't get into the fields until June. Some even reported planting in July. Last year, after the first week of June, only 46% of the corn had emerged, while that total stood at 90% last week. The 5-year average is 85%. But this year was much better. "It was a fast start," said Mike Orso, the news and communications strategist for the Illinois Farm Bureau. "As soon as the weather broke in April, the soil conditions were good and a lot of the crops got in during the month of April. But May was really rough. There was still quite a bit of work to do in May, and the amount of rainfall in central Illinois was almost like last year. But thankfully, we had that fast start in April, which we didn't have last year." Orso said that even though the ground conditions were good in April, they weren't perfect. "April was cold," he added. "Crops struggled to emerge. We then got the moisture, and now lately we have had the heat, so things are starting to make progress." Last spring's heavy rains dropped production significantly. Soybean production fell nearly 10% last year, and corn production was off 13%. The USDA anticipates farmers will plant 8% more corn acres than last year. Corn, planted for all purposes in 2020, is estimated at 97 million acres, which is an increase of 7.29 million acres from 2019 plantings. The 5-year national average for planted corn is 90.15 million acres. Illinois farmers intend to plant 11.3 million acres of corn, just over the 5-year average of 11.2 million acres, and 8% above 2019's final planted area. In 2019, 1.15 million acres of corn prevented from planting in Illinois due to excess moisture. Illinois farmers are expected to plant 6% more soybean acres than last year. The USDA estimates farmers in the state to plant 10.5 million acres. And next from the front page, Service Blends Faith, Open Road. Tony Reed writes from Forsyth, "Socially distanced from their machines, but not their faith, hundreds of motorcyclists gathered in Forsyth Sunday for the 28th Blessing of the Bikes service. The blessings are usually administered with a laying on of hands by teams of volunteers as the bikers line up on their rumbling steeds in the parking lot of the Kojar Harley-Davidson dealership. But COVID-19 social distancing requirements kicked that approach to the curb, so the blessing, which is normally done in April, was held Sunday, Vatican style. Instead of St. Peter's Square, the faithful, who art in leather, dismounted and fanned out in a vast semicircle around a raised platform in the dealership lot to be blessed collectively and hands-free. "We'll take any blessing and any good luck we can get," said Zach Stemple, 29, from Decatur. He was there with his girlfriend, Mandy Rawlings, 30, and Stemple's parents, 53-year-old Tim Stemple and Trina Stemple, 54, from Cerro Gordo. Zach Stemple explained that a love of bikes, like brown hair or blue eyes, tends to get passed down in genetics from one generation to the next. You grow up around it and you kind of naturally develop an interest and a love for it, he added. It's definitely a family thing. And we love to be here because it's fun to visit with everybody and just be around the bikes, said Mandy Rawlings. Her boyfriend said it's not that surprising that a sense of faith and motorcycles blend together so well. He explained that for the same reason you won't probably find anyone with Chrysler minivan tattooed on their left bicep, but can glimpse Harley skin art everywhere. There is just something about the sense of freedom with motorcycling that feeds the soul. We just like to feel free and ride, not worry about anything, explained Trina Stemple. Riding duo Bill and Sylvia Barnes call the motorcycle path to a Zen state of mind wind therapy. The husband and wife from Monticello, he's 56 and she's 55, were in town for the blessing but explained they recently hedged their safety bets by adding an extra wheel after investing in a trike. And invest is the right word. A Harley trike can easily cost around $40,000, and a tricked-out all-the-options model could leave a $60,000 skid mark in your bank account. The Barneses say it's worth every cent. It's not just a motorcycle, it's a way of life, said Bill Barnes, and we go out every chance we get, said his wife. And the article is accompanied by a photograph of Bill and Sylvia Barnes on their big red trike, captioned Monticello couple Bill and Sylvia Barnes call the thrill of the open road on a motorcycle their wind therapy. They rode into Forsyth on Sunday for the blessing of the bikes service and recently hedged their safety bets by investing in a Harley trike. And moving to the local and state page, father-son team up on bagpipes for virus relief. When Damon McParland pulled up in his van on a West Side neighborhood, little did his son, Aiden, know he had a surprise waiting for him. For the last 3 weeks or so, the father-son bagpipe tandem have been traversing the city playing little community get-togethers for birthdays and last day of school events as part of United We Pipe. The May 29th gig brought together four friends who met at Lincoln Magnet School, Alex Remolina, Jack McLaughlin, Joe Tixos, and McParland, for Remolina's graduation party. When I saw this advertised, I thought what an awesome way to celebrate their high school graduation, considering the unique circumstances with COVID-19, said Melissa Romolina, Alex's mother. United We Pipe has raised nearly $3,000 so far for the COVID-19 Response Fund, a joint effort between the Community Foundation for the Land of Lincoln and United Way of Central Illinois. Damon McParland, a Chinese language teacher at Isles School, said the idea of United We Pipe formulated after the two bagpipers were silenced around St. Patrick's Day events, normally a busy time for pipers. The city's annual parade was canceled because of health concerns for large gatherings, so Aiden McParland, 18, had the idea of going on the family's front porch and playing a few tunes for neighbors. That went over really well. The neighbors really appreciated that, Damon McParland said. We did a few more like that for friends who couldn't leave their houses for various reasons. It eventually led to the two teaming with the COVID-19 Response Fund. While the duo only charges $25 per gig, it solicits funds. There's a bagpipe case open with a sign reading, "Pay the Piper," at each gathering. It's out of the ordinary for a lot of people, admitted Aidan McParland, who graduated from Springfield High School. They probably only ever heard bagpipes at St. Patrick's Day, so it's a new experience for them. With the quarantine, where every day runs into the next one, it's something to break up the pattern. A lot of them are curious how the bagpipes work. They'll ask about it afterwards. It's something pretty unique and fun to share with people. United We Pipe doesn't offer up a stage show. The two interject movie themes like Star Wars and even reenact the Piper Down scene from the movie So I Married an Axe Murderer. One of the show's highlights is Aidan playing AC/DC's Thunderstruck. I saw a YouTube of this 16-year-old playing, and I was like, yeah, I could probably do that, Aidan McParland said. He posted the arrangement online, so I just downloaded that and played it a bunch at home and started building up the speed, and then slowly I sort of got there. He plays it a lot better and a lot faster. But Aidan's catching up, Damon McParland added. McParland's daughter, Emma, has been dancing for the local St. Andrews Society since she was 5 years old. A recent graduate of Michigan State University, she has joined United We Pipe for several shows. It's been a lot of fun, said Emma McParland, 22, who starts graduate school at Oakland University. And a photograph accompanies this article with the two McParlands standing in a front yard in bright blue and green kilts and their bagpipes with a front porch filled with onlookers. The caption reads, Damon McParland gets assistance from his son, Aidan McParland Wright, in tuning his bagpipes prior to a performance for United We Pipe during a birthday party in a neighborhood on South Lincoln Avenue in Springfield on May 30th. The duo formed United We Pipe as a way of raising money through neighborhood concerts held following social distancing guidelines during the COVID-19 pandemic, with the proceeds going to COVID-19 Response Fund for the Greater Capital Region of Illinois, established by the United Way of Central Illinois and the Community Foundation for the Land of Lincoln. And next, Valerie Wells writes from Decatur. Student Ambassador heads for college. When the Student Ambassadors program was implemented in 2018, the idea was that high school students would sit in on the Decatur Board of Education meetings and offer their perspective on issues that came up. The first four students, Jacob Hamm and Allison McCready from MacArthur High School, Kayaria Cotton and Londarius Hayes from Eisenhower, were welcome to attend any or all meetings, though they couldn't vote and they couldn't attend closed executive sessions. Hayes, a 2020 graduate, has been to every meeting and is the only ambassador to serve 2 years. A young man of many talents, he is also an all-state musician. I wanted to be a student ambassador because I felt there was a lack of students' voices within the school board and felt like I could be that person to communicate the student voice to the board, said Hayes, who will attend the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign in the fall. He plans to study architecture and business and plans to seek a master's degree with the dream of opening his own architecture firm one day. School Board President Beth Nolan said the Student Ambassador Program was discussed for several years before it began in 2018, and it has worked just the way she hoped it would. We are able to ask the student ambassadors direct questions when administration brings recommendations and discussion items, she said. They articulate how this could impact their student experience, and they also challenge us with questions to think about the topics of conversation from their perspective. Especially this past year, they have had a front seat view of the challenges that face boards and how elected leaders are held accountable by the community. Hayes, in particular, she said, has proven to be a valuable asset to the board. Londarius, more than any other student ambassador, has challenged us to think differently, Nolan said. From day one, he has not been shy about asking questions that make us pause to consider the student voice and make us reflect whether the decision being made is truly in the best interest of our students. I was immediately impressed with his moxie and ambition. He sits quietly listening to the conversation, but will then softly ask a thoughtful question about a complex topic that challenges all of us to think a little differently and dive a little deeper. The goals he has for himself are lofty and impressive, and that has motivated me as a board member to make sure we are providing a strong foundation so he can achieve them. When he first began in the position, Hayes said, he didn't study the board packet as closely as he learned to do along the way. He and the other student ambassadors held their own meetings before board meetings to discuss issues and what points they wanted to make to the board. He said he learned that some things take time to work through, and the board has to take that time to avoid hasty decisions without thorough study. Personally, I've become more well-rounded, Hayes said. I'm able to communicate and vocalize my thoughts more openly and improved my thinking process. I became a more complex thinker and I've gained much more knowledge than I had prior to this experience. And next, Scott Perry, named local news editor. Scott Perry has been named local news editor of the Herald and Review. He replaces Allison Petty, who will be relocating to Bloomington as local news editor of the Pantograph. Both are part of Lee Enterprises, Inc. Perry had been deputy night editor, helping oversee the print production of the newspaper. Scott is an extraordinarily committed editor and advocate for community journalism here, said Central Illinois editor Chris Coates, who oversees the Pantograph, Herald and Review, and two other newspapers in the state. He understands our community and the importance of a strong local newspaper. Perry is a Decatur native and graduate of Niantic Harristown High School and Southern Illinois University at Carbondale. During his nearly 28 years with the Herald and Review, Perry has served as its bureau chief in Mattoon and Effingham, night editor, business editor, managing editor, and the Herald and Review's interim editor. He also was the editor of the Business Journal and served as the interim editor of the JGTC in Mattoon. Prior to joining the Herald and Review, Perry spent 4 years as a reporter at the Effingham Daily News. I'm looking forward to this latest opportunity to help lead my award-winning hometown newspaper and its excellent team of journalists, Perry said. The new positions are effective on Monday. And next, police recover shell casings. From Decatur, police on patrol rushed to the area of the 1300 block of North Water Street in Decatur around 3 a.m. Saturday after hearing the sound of 5 gunshots, an officer's report said. Sergeant Sean Gunther with Decatur Police said officers did not find any evidence of gunfire, but later recovered 2 9mm shell casings on the roadway. And this has been Wendy Bauer. We will return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald in Review. Please stay tuned.